Of Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
All opinion polls leave no room for doubt. The leader of the centre-right party and former Prime Minister Kyriakos Mitsotakis is expected to obtain a landslide victory in the Greek elections this Sunday. Polls are predicting more. The New Democracy Party will prevail over left-leaning opponent Syriza with an even larger winning margin than the vote held last month. On May 21st, Mitsotakis did not win enough votes to form a one-party government. That's why he secured a sweeping victory with over 40% of the vote and a 20 percentage point advantage over his rival Syriza's Alexis Tsipras. In the aftermath, Mitsotakis called for a second round of voting, which will be held in the midst of growing distrust for politics. During last month's elections, those who didn't vote outnumber the ones voting for the leading party. Greeks' disaffection for traditional politics was also made evident by 28% of the votes going to extra-parliamentary forces and the country's radical parties.
Why? The reason why? Because I don't see that we're going to make the difference, that's why. Anybody in this country do exactly the same things. That's why I don't want to vote. I don't want to involve in this situation.
I personally, I don't have a political opinion because every politician doesn't do well when he's elected.
The turnout in May elections stood at about 60%, one of the lowest levels ever recorded in Greece since it became a republic in 1974. The media keeps reporting that the country's economy has been steady over the past years, that unemployment is improving, and Athens will post one of the largest debt reduction internationally thanks to its program of reforms. But the situation on the ground is very much different, and an increasing number of Greeks are struggling to afford basic goods.
Non indica la vera situazione economica del paese.
These rigged socio-economic indicators only disorient voters. The truth is that the growth is not equally distributed. Unemployment is very high, particularly among young people, and the country's foreign debt is still huge. There is no investment strategy in place.
Mitsotakis is likely to be Greece's prime minister again, despite his previous government survived a wiretapping scandal that rocked political system and heavy criticism following a deadly train accident last February. Recently, the leader of the New Democracy Party has also been attacked by opposition politicians and members of non-governmental organizations over the handling of the sinking of a trawler carrying as many as 750 migrants in the Mediterranean Sea on June 14. Hundreds of people are believed to be drowned in the accident. Max Civili, Athens.
The spectacular geological site of outstanding natural beauty lies within the limits of the Aras River to the north and the southern end of the Lesser Caucasus mountain range. Designated by the UNESCO, Aras Geopark enjoys a range of climates as well as rich geodiversity and biodiversity while linking different cultures on the northern and southern sides of the mountain chain.
As of today, I extend my invitation to anyone from across the world who loves our planet and who wants to learn more about the geologic history of Earth to visit this spectacular heritage where 400 million years of evolution is documented.
Definitely a cause for celebration. The recent UNESCO designation is the result of decades of hard work by Iranian experts and officials on both a local and national level.
In 1995, a group of experts, including myself, started working on the dossier to present it to UNESCO. There were many ups and downs, but eventually, with the support of all managers of Aras Free Zone organization throughout these years, the region was finally designated as a UNESCO geopark.
Located in Iran's East Azerbaijan province, Aras Geopark covers an area of about 1,670 square kilometers. The highest point being Mount Kiamaki and Julfa, arching over 3,347 meters into the sky, and the lowest, the Aras River Valley. This is definitely a geotourism attraction with a diverse tectonic structure, flora, and fauna.
At Aras Free Zone Organization, we managed to follow up this dossier and it led to this achievement. But let's not forget that this is only the beginning. There's still a lot that needs to be done.
400 million years of the history of the Earth is summed up in this region, making a perfect destination for scientists and researchers.
The UNESCO Global Geopark designation was created in 2015 and recognizes geological heritage of international significance. The recent designation of Aras Geopark brings the total up to 195 sites, covering a surface area of about 486,000 square kilometers worldwide.
The UNESCO designation of Aras Geopark is considered a turning point, not just because it can act as a magnet for tourists, but also because it raises awareness about sites and landscapes of international geological significance. Gisumi Shahmadi, Aras.
Scholar Archmond Ahmed Ghulamifard and Hosseini Mofred arrive in court in The Hague having travelled from Iran to seek justice. A fifth Iranian man, Ghadir Jafari, is also part of the campaign but couldn't attend due to ill health. The former soldiers say two Dutch firms supplied chemicals to Saddam Hussein in the 1980s and the Iraqi dictator used these to create and deploy deadly mustard gas.
In December 1986, I was exposed to a gas attack. My lungs are burned. I have problems with my respiratory system.
The men's lawyers are in no doubt that Dutch firms Malkomi and KBS Holland are culpable.
The mustard gas produced in those years and up until 86 can only have been produced with their chemicals. And so we say the victims that fell in that period, some of whom are here today, must have been, it can't be different, must have been injured by the chemicals of this Dutch company.
The regime of Western-backed Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein killed and severely injured tens of thousands of Iranians during the 1980 to 1988 war, often using chemical weapons. Experts say mustard gas kills slowly from the inside out.
It basically burns the whole lung. And it also damages eye and skin, immune system. It can cause cancer.
Those seeking justice say their main aim is to save others from ever going through their agony.
I want my voice to be heard so that no one else in the world will use chemical weapons again like they did against us. The world needs tougher regulations to prevent development, production and use of these weapons.
The Dutch firms being sued by survivors claim the chemicals they supplied to Iraq were intended for agricultural pesticide use only. Having listened to a full day of complex evidence, the three judges presiding over this case in the district court ruled that a verdict will be delivered on the 23rd of August. Jerome Hughes, The Hague.
With the killing of three Palestinian fighters in a rare drone strike on Akkar near Jenin, in north of the occupied West Bank late Wednesday, Israel seems to have taken off its gloves by using armed drones again to carry out targeted killings of Palestinian fighters. The recent attack was the first in the occupied West Bank since 2006. Palestinians say this policy has never been able to deter resistance in the past and never will in the future.
The return to the use of drones and the policy of assassination is not new, and many of Israeli officials admit that this tactic has never been able to deter Palestinian resistance in the past. I believe Netanyahu's regime needs to take whatever action it can, and the military establishment had no choice but to tell the Israelis that they can prevent Palestinian resistance after what happened in Jenin several days ago, and the increase in using weapons and the exchange of fire with Israeli forces. This cabinet needs to prove it's not deteriorating.
In September 2022, Israeli military commanders were given the green light to use armed drones to carry out targeted killings of Palestinian fighters with the approval of then-Army Chief Aviv Kochavi. But Wednesday's killings took place as many top Israeli authorities were calling for tougher action against Palestinian fighters and an escalation in the use of force against what they described as terror. That came after a significant rise in shootings during raids where Palestinians were arrested, specifically in the northern occupied West Bank cities of Jenin and Nablus.
The Palestinians are here to stay, here to continue, and here to be victorious. So no matter what Israel does, every action has an equal and opposite reaction. That's the law of physics, and that's the law of the Palestinian people. We work upon this, we believe in this, and we will continue to exist according to this.
The escalation of Israeli military actions came as Israeli extremist settlers torched cars and homes in a wave of attacks on Palestinian towns in revenge for Tuesday's killings of four Israeli settlers by Palestinian fighters outside the Ili settlement between Ramallah and Nablus. Moreover, in an attempt to calm down the settlers' community and his allies in the cabinet, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu announced plans to build 1,000 new homes in the Ili settlement. Israel is escalating the already high tensions in the occupied West Bank. Experts say Netanyahu's regime might think its military actions can curb the Palestinians' resistance. But in fact, these actions show how quickly the situation in the West Bank is deteriorating to reach a level where a new uprising or intifada could take place. Mona Qandil, occupied Ramallah.
As the world gears up to mark the UN-designated International Day in Support of Victims of Torture, a news conference in London sheds light on the Bahraini government's widespread torture against prisoners and dissidents across the country.
Torture is a pandemic in modern world. Despite all what is said about the development and the international tendency towards democracy, what we see is different.
The UN Convention Against Torture, one of the key instruments in fighting torture, came into effect in 1987. It took Bahrain, a UK ally, 12 years to join.
The UK government has provided Bahrain, its wealthy Persian Gulf ally, millions of dollars in recent years through an opaque fund supposedly aimed at improving human rights and also promoting the rule of law in the repressive monarchy.
On June 16th, British lawmakers expressed their grave concern about the UK government funding for Bahrain, which has only increased in recent years, despite the worsening political repression in the Persian Gulf country.
The UK, for all I am an outspoken critic of the UK and its existence and its actions, it has a considerable degree of soft power around the world. It also has economic power, and we should be using all of these levers to affect the change that we would want to see.
There are 1,400 political prisoners in Bahrain. 26 are at imminent risk of execution. Opposition activist Ali Al-Fayed has experienced torture firsthand for not sharing with the Bahraini police the addresses of people he did not even know. Bahrain's Crown Prince Salman bin Hamad Al Khalifa is visiting London this month. With the UK's track record of supporting dictatorships around the world, activists say the chances of a sudden shift in its foreign policy towards the regime remain slim. Said Purza, London.
A United Nations expert claimed on Monday that the Taliban's treatment of Afghan women and girls could amount to gender apartheid and crimes against humanity. Richard Bennett called on the Taliban to respect and restore women's and girls' human rights and to form an all-inclusive government in Afghanistan.
These serious deprivations of women and girls' fundamental human rights and the harsh enforcement by the de facto authorities of their restrictive measures may constitute the crime against humanity of gender persecution. Grave, systematic, and institutionalized discrimination against women and girls, as is at the heart of Taliban ideology and rule, which also gives rise to concerns that they may be responsible for gender apartheid, a serious human rights violation.
The UN High Deputy Commissioner for Human Rights also highlighted the plight of Afghan women, criticizing the Taliban for not abiding by their promise of upholding the rights of women and girls.
Despite repeatedly asserting that women's rights will be protected within the framework of Sharia, over the past 22 months, every aspect of women's and girls' lives has been restricted. They are discriminated against in every way. Edict after edict has been issued, the cumulative effect of which has been to erase women and girls from public life and prevent them from accessing and enjoying their fundamental rights and freedoms. Afghanistan is the only country in the world where girls are denied education beyond primary level.
The Taliban spokesman on Tuesday responded to the UN experts' report in a post on Twitter, accusing the West and the UN of spreading propaganda against the Islamic Emirate. He added that the de facto government is implementing Islam in Afghanistan. Ever since taking power, the Taliban authorities have been insisting that they respect women's rights in accordance with Islamic laws and Afghan culture. Human rights, especially for women and girls, has been one of the controversial issues between the Taliban and the international community. Meanwhile, Afghan people want their rights to be safeguarded, not politicized. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
The UK government has introduced legislation to Parliament which proposes a total ban on boycotting Israeli goods. The proposed legislation will prevent public bodies from adopting their own approach to international relations, including through sanctions and divestment campaigns. Universities and local councils are likely to be most affected, with critics saying this is the latest assault on freedom of speech in Britain.
The right of organisations and authorities and so on to withdraw their money from inhumane and illegal projects. You know, that should be an absolute right. And we're also seeing, not only in terms of the BDS, but we're seeing the government restriction of the right to protest, you know, with the Public Order Act really accelerated into implementation last week.
What we're asking for as a British public is sanction Israel. We're asking for international law to be upheld. If any other country was breaking this many laws this frequently on an international level, sanctions will be placed upon them without doubt. So we're asking for level playing field here, international law to be applied to Israel, sanction Israel now.
Why should that right to protest, a peaceful democratic protest, why should that be withdrawn from us? And it's another indication of an increasingly authoritarian tendency from our government.
The Boycott, Divestment and Sanctions Movement, also known as BDS, is the main target of this government plan. A Palestinian-led initiative promoting boycotts and economic sanctions against Israel amid ongoing crimes against the occupied Palestinian people. The movement has grown so popular that governments across Europe have been working to curb their activities. The UK's effort is spearheaded by well-known pro-Israel British MPs, particularly Michael Gove, a government minister. Gove, who has a long track record of praising Israel and has been accused multiple times of Islamophobia, has said that disruptive campaigns to boycott Israel lead to appalling anti-Semitic rhetoric and abuse.
Monday saw the first of what will be many readings before a later debate and vote will take place. If the bill does indeed pass into law, then offenders could face significant fines or investigations. Pro-Israel groups have welcomed the legislation, while at least 70 civil society organisations have opposed it. Robert Carter, London.
Thank you.
This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio, with you every single moment.
The Supplication on Tuesdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, and praise is His right, since Him deserves it, abundant praise. I seek refuge in Him from the evil of my soul, for surely the soul commands to evil, except as my Lord has mercy. I seek refuge in Him from the evil of Satan, who adds sins to my sin. I seek protection with Him from every wicked tyrant and unjust sovereign and conquering enemy. O Allah, place me among Thy troops are the victors, and place me in Thy party, for Thy party are the ones who prosper. And place me among Thy friends, for Thy friends no fear shall be upon them, nor shall they sorrow. O Allah, set right for me my religion, for it is the preserving tie of my affair. Set right for me my hereafter, for it is the abode of my permanent lodging, and to it I flee from the neighborhood of the vile. Make life an increase for me in every good, and death an ease for me from every evil. O Allah, bless Muhammad, the seal of the prophets, and the completion of the number of the envoys, and his household, the good, the pure, and his household, the good, the pure, and his companions, the distinguished. And give me on the Tuesday three things. Leave no sin for me unless Thou forgives it, and leave no grief unless Thou takes it away, and leave no enemy, and leave no enemy unless Thou repelst him. By means of in the name of Allah, the best of the names, in the name of Allah, Lord of earth and heaven, I seek to repulse every hateful thing, the first of which is His anger, and I seek to attract every lovable thing, the first of which is His good pleasure. So seal me with forgiveness from Thee, O Patron of Beneficence.
Joining us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Systemic terrorism continues in the occupied territories as Zionist settler colonialists wreak more havoc against Palestinians. Armed settlers opened fire indiscriminately and burned homes and vehicles. More Palestinians were attacked, crops and land burned, all under the protection of the Zionist military. This is being done while the Zionists are trying to usurp more Palestinian lands with their expansion of illegal settlements. And of course, this apartheid regime is continually allowed to operate with terrorism as its modus operandi, as the so-called international community does nothing. Well, I'd like to welcome my guests to this program. Khaled Barakat, spokesperson, Masar Badil Movement, out of Vancouver. Zafar Bangash, director of Institute of Contemporary Islamic Thought, out of Toronto. Thank you both for being with me. Let's start this off in Vancouver. And Khaled, I mean, why do you think that we're seeing an increase of the settler violence and on an almost daily basis, at least one Palestinian being killed by regime forces?
Well, I think that what's happening today in Palestine is we are witnessing in daily attacks by Israeli settlers with the full protection and cover of the Israeli Zionist army. Now, it's very important to understand that these settlers are basically paramilitary and mercenaries. Most of them, they come from New York and Berlin, Paris, cities in the West. They are continuing the Israeli settler project in Palestine as it was founded, 75 years ago and even before that. When we look at who actually established this settler colonialist regime of Israel, it was settlers just like the one in the West Bank and in all of Palestine, really, because we do not differentiate between colonies in the West Bank and colonies in Al-Naqab, for example, or in Haifa. The nature of this regime is based on a settler colonialist nature, and what guides settler is a theme: more land and less Arabs. They want to grab more land and they want to see less Palestinians in Palestine. And this is a systematic policy that Israel uses in order to actually push Palestinians on the policy they call slowly transfer, which means not just building settlements and colonies in the West Bank, but also evacuate more Palestinians. We see this goes hand in hand. When you look at Israeli bulldozers, destroying Palestinian homes, you will see the same bulldozers building Israeli colonies. So this is very important to see. We also need to understand that this is completely a business and profit for Israeli companies who are complicit in this, basically the industry of settlements, because they give Israeli companies all kind of contracts in order to... So everyone is actually complicit in this, whether the Israeli government, whether the settler organizations, or whether the Zionist movement in Europe and in North America, with full protection of U.S. government and European governments. Mm-hmm. And this entire system shows clearly the nature of Israel as a colonialist settler project.
Okay, well, I want to touch on part of what you said a little bit later about the support system coming out of Europe and North America. But let me get Zafar involved in this conversation. Zionist settlers have defiled a mosque, entering it with a dog and even tearing up Qurans. And this shows their sheer hatred and racism against Muslims, against Palestinians in general. So I want to talk about the lack of condemnation. We always hear about religious tolerance and respect, especially coming out of the Canadian capital or United States or England. So what's going on here? Why is it a different framework when it comes to the Palestinians?
Well, I think we need to be clear about the fact that because Zionist Israel is a colonial settler entity, and the vast majority of people that are involved in this colonial enterprise, they are from North America, including Canada and Europe, and they are the kith and kin of these people. And that's why no crime that Israel perpetrates, whether it's the so-called settlers, in fact, we should not call them settlers, they are illegal squatters, or the Zionist army, or its police forces, they are all involved in this enterprise of ethnically cleansing the Palestinian people from their lands. And for the Palestinians, the Nakba has not ended. It occurred 75 years ago, but it's been continuing now as well for the last 75 years. And what these so-called settlers have demonstrated is that they have no regard whatsoever for the sentiments of the Palestinian people. They barge into mosques, including Masjid al-Aqsa, which is the third holiest place for the Muslims. They barge in with their filthy boots. They take, you know, in this latest attack that they carried out, there were dogs that were taken into the mosque, and they tore copies of the Quran. And as you asked as to why there is silence in the West, it is because these criminals that are involved in these activities are kith and kin of the West. And the West in general, and the United States in particular, wants to continue to have turmoil in that region, because it then helps in their arms sales to that region, because Zionist Israel continues to create instability. So there are two aspects to it. One is the internal situation in Palestine, and the other is the external dimension of support that is provided to the Zionist criminal enterprise of colonial settlers. Internally, of course, the Israelis keep on pushing the Palestinians out of their land by killing them, by ethnically cleansing them. You know, for instance, in the West Bank, there are something like 600 to 700,000 illegal squatters in the West Bank, and they usurp the overwhelming majority of the choicest land of water. In fact, 90% of the water in the West Bank is utilized by these 600,000 to 700,000 Zionist squatters, whereas the only 10% of the water of the West Bank is left for about 2.8 million Palestinians. So one can begin to see that this entire project is based upon ethnically cleansing the Palestinians of their land. Mm-hmm. And on the other hand, you have these external powers, the Europeans, with the exception of perhaps Ireland, that has been supportive of the Palestinian cause, but the United States in particular, that pumps in billions of dollars into this parasitical state to continue its aggressive policies. And any crime that they commit, these people remain completely silent, because that is exactly what they want. They don't care about others' rights. They don't care about the Palestinians' rights. They don't care about religion or anything. It's just that this advances the West's agenda in that region as well.
Well, Khaled, we've heard some statements by Israeli security chiefs this time around, actually calling the settler attacks on Palestinian villages as nationalist terrorism. So your thoughts about that? Why do you think this time around they have actually condemned it in this way?
Well, I think, you know, they're trying to play bad cop, good cop kind of policy. But Netanyahu, it's just like he's just like Ben Gafir. It's just the other coin of Ben Gafir. And the government today in Israel is the only thing that it's keeping it intact is the forces that represent the settlers project, particularly Ben Gafir, Smotrich and others. And we see that these open calls from Israeli ministers to, he said, even if we have to kill thousands. Basically, this is the same phrases that settlers in Palestine in the 30s and 40s used when they committed hundreds of massacres that led to a Nakba of 1948 and the displacement of the vast majority of the Palestinian people. What they want to do now is to, as your guest said, that a Nakba did not stop and it's continuing. And what they want to do is to create another major catastrophe for the Palestinian people by pushing Palestinians to leave their villages. These settlers, when you look at these settlements, every Palestinian village today in the West Bank is surrounded by three or four settlements right on the hills of the West Bank and the mountains looking down at Palestinian villages and towns. And they feel that they can actually displace Palestinians from the West Bank. And they say that publicly, that if they want, they can go to Jordan. And we see, for example, today the United States said that they are going to seize some of the funds that they provide for organizations in the settlements, which means that the United States actually funds settlers and settlements, mm-hmm. and they have been doing so. And now they're just kind of trying to practice some pressure for media consumptions. But what it actually says is that the United States provide material support for these paramilitary gangs that they call themselves, settlers. They mm-hmm. are, when you look at any Israeli colony or settlement in the West Bank, what they have there is a military training camp. They have a prison. They have, arsenal. They're well-trained, military-trained. And some of them served in the Canadian forces, the United States forces, French forces, German army. And many of them don't even speak Hebrew. That's why they're kind of mercenaries, and they're paramilitary, and they act like a shield for the Zionist project. And that's why the Palestinian resistance said any settler in Bank or in Palestine is a legitimate target for the Palestinian resistance. These settlers are a legitimate target for the Palestinian resistance because they are worse than even the organized Israeli army. The other thing that Israel depends on settlers to carry crimes because there is no one to blame. And they can always say, well, it's not the government of Israel who did this. It's settlements who are settlers who are angry. And basically, they're trying to play a complementary role, the army and the settlers, in terms of attacking Palestinians and achieving the goals of the Zionist project. Now, I think they are failing miserably because Palestinians are not going anywhere. And Palestinians, even under the most harsh conditions in Gaza, under 15 years of siege, the Palestinian resistance is growing and the Palestinian people are not leaving Palestine. They know, Palestinians, they understand that they must be steadfast. They must uphold to their land, their farms, their villages and towns. And they feel that this is not just a battle between them and the Israeli settlers or the Zionist regime, but they feel, Palestinians feels that they are the forefront for the Arab and Muslim nations and for the people of the region.
Okay.
And so they have a responsibility to be steadfast.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Right. Well, what about that, Zafar? Because we have seen some mixed statements coming out of the Israeli regime, as I had mentioned, about the security chiefs and trying to basically condemn some of these settlement attacks. Do you think that that's because of fear? I mean, Khalid has just talked about the resistance and how steadfast the resistance is. And, of course, they're expecting blowback as they have become more and more violent against the Palestinians over the last several weeks. Do you think the fear factor is part of it? While we're trying, sometimes we see this sort of a good cop, bad cop act with them, actually security chiefs of all people, sort of condemning this as national terrorism. Or how do you see it, Zafar?
Well, there is no doubt that they are playing this good cop, bad cop routine in order to deflect criticism from the Zionist regime. But as you know, your guest pointed out that the Zionist regime is supporting these settlers. They are, you know, they have served in the military. They continue to serve. They have weapons, etc. So that's one dimension of it. Although I would say that yes, there is no doubt that there is a fear factor involved, because despite the extreme brutalities of the Zionist occupiers for more than 75 years, they have not been able to subdue the Palestinian people. In fact, to the great credit of the Palestinian people, they're totally, virtually unarmed, and yet they are able to resist these criminal Zionist terrorists with virtually nothing in their hands, and they are able to face these barbarians and are still able to inflict some punishment upon them. It is important to keep in mind that under international law, people under occupation have the right to resist their occupiers by whatever means necessary. This has been repeatedly enunciated by United Nations General Assembly resolutions, not Security Council resolutions, regrettably, because any time such resolutions come before the Security Council, the United States is there to veto these resolutions, so Israel is protected. But the General Assembly, which represents the will of the international community of 193 countries, has on two occasions stated quite categorically that people under occupation have the right to resist their occupiers. And we have seen this resistance growing stronger, not only in the tiny Gaza Strip, which is besieged, but also in Jenin and in Nablus and now in other areas. I mean, it is to the immense credit of the Palestinian people that they have not surrendered to the Zionist terrorist campaign. In fact, it's a test of will between the Palestinians and the Zionists. And to their great credit, the Palestinians have shown themselves to be extremely courageous. And I would like to add that it is now up to the rest of the Muslim world, the Muslims around the world, that they should not only simply express solidarity with the suffering Palestinian people, but to provide them material support so that they can continue to resist these Zionist criminals and drive them out of Palestine and enforce a system whereby all the people, Palestinians, whether they are Muslims or Christians, as well as Jews who are the original, those who were there originally in Palestine, they can live as equal citizens under the law, not these alien invaders from Europe, North America, etc., that have inundated that land and are basically killing innocent Palestinians, particularly children. I mean, when you look at the statistics, it's horrendous. This year alone, in 2023 up to the present time, more than 170 Palestinians have been killed. That includes 30 children. Yes. And in fact, you know, some Israeli writers have written about it, UC Klein and, you know, in the Haaretz, etc. But unfortunately for these Zionist criminals, Palestinian lives do not matter. And therefore, the Palestinians are forced to resist the occupiers. And that has put fear of God into the minds of these people.
Well, Khaled, what do you think it's going to take? I mean, Zafar talked about the 193 members of the General Assembly and how the majority of them actually, more and more, they're being very vocal about actually the Palestinian situation. But of course, at the end of the day, it's the Security Council in the United States or UK that vetoes whatever they want to do against the Israeli regime. But we are seeing from the global south, from different parts of the world, from Africa, from West Asia, more and more support for the Palestinian cause. What is it going to take to actually, on the international level, then break this control by these Western regimes in support of Tel Aviv in order to actually force the hand of that regime?
Well, I think that the United Nations and the international, so-called international community, they have issued hundreds of resolutions calling for Israel to stop settlements, calling for not to expand settlements, considering the apartheid wall to be illegal, and all that. But the problem is that these international resolutions does not have any teeth when it comes to Israel, because, as you mentioned, the United States veto is ready to defuse any kind of real international efforts. We know that the United States used its veto power, over 45 times throughout the conflict. Any time that Israel needs a protection on the international level, you are going to see Germany, France, Britain, United States, Australia supporting Israel, including Canada. And now, why is that? Why is also these particular countries like U.S., Canada, and, is because these are colonialist powers as well. Mm-hmm. Canada is a settler colonialist state, and it doesn't want anyone to remind the world that what Israel is doing, they did this.
So is it basically, Khaled, sorry to interrupt you, I'm just about out of time. So basically, is it resistance is the only way to victory for the Palestinian people?
The only way, and to defeat the United States and the Western powers in West Asia and our region, because that's the problem. Israel wouldn't exist without the full funding of the United States, Canada, Germany, and France. This Western powers needs to be defeated, and the only way to be defeated is through our resistance in the region and internationally, okay, in a resistance camp led by Iran, Hezbollah, Hamas, Islamic Jihad, all of the resistant forces of our region.
Okay, and on that note, I'd like to thank both of you for being with me. Khaled Barakat, spokesperson, Masar Badel Movement out of Vancouver. Zafar Bangash, Director, Institute of Contemporary Islamic Thought out of Toronto. And as always, it's a pleasure having you being with us on another Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi, signing out for myself and other group right here in Tehran. Goodbye.
From east to west, throughout the vast land of Iran, you're listening to IRIB English Radio. In the limelight.
Radical Zionist settlers several years ago established an illegal outpost in Homesh and claimed it was a religious school or a yeshiva. The Zionist regime's military has repeatedly evacuated the outpost, which was established on private Palestinian land, but Zionist settlers would rebuild. The Israeli regime Knesset earlier this year passed a law that repealed the 2005 Israeli regime disengagement from the northern occupied West Bank and allows Zionist citizens to enter the area between Jenin and Nablus, provided a decree is issued by the IDF. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Middle East Eye reported, Zionist settlers recently relocated a Jewish religious school originally established on private Palestinian land in the illegal outpost of Homesh to a nearby land. Settlers have long campaigned for a yeshiva to be established in the area, and the latest move is part of an incremental effort by the Zionist regime's government to legalize the Homesh settlement built deep inside the occupied West Bank. Earlier this year, the Zionist regime's lawmakers approved a controversial piece of legislation that would allow four abandoned Jewish settlements in the West Bank, including Homesh, Sanur, Ganim, and Kadim, to be re-established after they were dismantled in 2005. The recent steps to tentatively re-establish the illegal settlements was made with the approval of the Zionist regime's war minister, Yoav Gallant, and was given the green light by the Zionist regime's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. The Zionist regime's military is allowing settlers to enter and exit Homesh freely, but journalists have been blocked from reporting on the construction efforts, according to Haaretz. The Zionist regime's government is working on rolling back elements of then-Prime Minister Ariel Sharon's plan for disengagement from Gaza, which saw the four Israeli settlements in the West Bank also evacuated. The Attorney General's West Bank office has opposed the relocation of the school and reiterated that the move to re-establish the Homesh settlement was illegal. The Zionist regime's government ordered the military to no longer prevent settlers from entering Homesh and to provide security. The military, however, decided not to assist in constructing the new outpost until its legality is clarified. The Shomron Regional Council, which includes Homesh, has obtained permission from the Zionist regime's governing body in the West Bank, the civil administration, to plan construction work, but it was not granted permission to start building. The Yeshdin organization, which provides legal advice to Palestinian landowners, said following the decision that instead of evacuating the outpost immediately, the Zionist regime is giving a reward to serious criminals. According to Yeshdin, the new location of the yeshiva still doesn't allow Palestinians to reach their land and further continues their disposition. The right-wing National Security Minister Itamar Ben-Gvir, whose party co-authored the bill, welcomed the move, describing it as a historic moment. The legislation is one of a series of actions by Netanyahu's far-right government that have dealt a blow to Palestinian hopes for statehood and is likely to raise tensions that are already at a boiling point. Netanyahu's government is dominated by settler leaders and allies who seek to promote settlement activity in occupied Palestinian territory. Now, Zionist settlers can potentially re-establish the four illegal settlements. The settlement of Homesh is one of the most politically charged and symbolic hilltops in the West Bank. In recent years, it has become a cause celebrate among settlers seeking to establish Jewish supremacy over the whole West Bank territory. For many Zionist settlers, it is also a means of establishing their religious arguments that no part of the land shall be off limits, as well as fulfilling a decades-long idea of grabbing as many hilltops as possible in a bid to establish facts on the ground. Despite not being allowed to establish a permanent presence in Homesh, Zionist settlers, often guarded by the Zionist regime troops, have regularly flaunted their presence on the hilltop. whether establishing tents, religious schools, and even parties on religious holidays, their presence has symbolized a vivid display of force that they will not allow politicians to give any concessions on illegal settlements.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.